In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to him and confront him. They can't stand that.
Welcome to another news. I'm Jeff Brady. We hear the second hour of the geoengineering debate with Dane Wigington and Professor Paul Beckwith. This is a second debate with Professor Beckwith. As you'll hear in this 1 hour, the discussion breaks down as Beckwith refuses to directly respond to specific questions. Yet it was a very important discussion to get on record during a live radio broadcast. Let's have a listen. And in this second hour, we welcome back Professor Paul Beckwith for round two. Professor Beckwith is a physicist and engineer. He's a part-time professor at the University of Ottawa Laboratory of Paleoclimatology and is in a PhD program with a focus on abrupt climate system change. And he's also with Carleton University Department of Geography and Environmental Studies. Mr. Beckwith does not believe global climate engineering operations have been deployed, but has agreed to look into Dane's research since the last debate. And again, we're here with Dane Wigington, the lead researcher for geoengineeringwatch.org, who focuses on the climate engineering issue and claims available evidence indicates geoengineering has been fully deployed for decades with catastrophic effects. Paul, welcome back to the live geoengineering discussion.
Hello.
Now, Professor Beckwith, could you please refresh listeners with a brief explanation of the type of research you're doing?
I look at the overall climate system and how the pieces fit together and how the where basically the climate was in the past, where it is now, and where it's heading in the future. So I look at abrupt climate change, how it causes great changes in the Arctic and how those changes in the Arctic disrupt the jet stream, causing extreme weather events around the world that we're seeing.
I asked if you would look at some of Dane's research on climate engineering. What did you find out?
Well, we have a fundamental difference in the causes for what is causing climate disruption or climate mayhem. We more or less agree that something's going on, that we're getting significant changes that are not good to, we're getting cities flooded out, we're getting rapid sea level rise, we're getting, massive hurricanes hitting the U.S., for example, because the ocean waters are much warmer. We're getting disruption of ocean currents. So we're getting all of these things happening, but our fundamental reasoning for why it's happening seems to be very, very different. And I guess the way to deal with, the way to deal with it is also different, because Dane would argue that, we just need to stop doing all of these things, humans are doing that presently disrupt the climate. And I argue that we need to deal with our greenhouse gases, that we need to actually work on ways to restore the climate that we had growing up as children to, so that our grandchildren have a similar stable climate. So we're different so there is agreement in some areas. I don't know, maybe Dane can comment.
Sure. I just wanted to clarify that researching some of Dane's material on climate engineering, were you able to agree on that climate engineering is actually occurring in real time that is causing some of the climate change that you're studying?
No, I don't believe that climate engineering is occurring at the moment to cause this disruption of our weather systems. I believe this disruption of our weather systems is happening based on the changes in the way that heat is distributed around the planet and the way that we've heated the Arctic much, much faster than the rest of any other part of the planet. And that's thrown off the way that heat is transferred from the equator to the Arctic in the ocean current and in the jet stream. And those disruptions are a direct result of the Arctic temperature amplification warming. And I also believe that in order to deal with this problem, we need to look at ways to remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. We need to look at ways to cool the Arctic, to stabilize the climate, as well as, you know, what everybody says, slash fossil fuel emissions. So I don't believe that we're engineering the climate.
Oh, okay.
Fundamental difference.
So it seems like I got you. We're back at, yeah. I think we're back at square one from the first hour. Dane, what are your responses here?
Well, first of all, thanks for joining us again in this continued debate. I think it's very necessary and essential. On the, you stated we have a different opinion as to the causes of the abrupt climate collapse, which I think we both agree is occurring. I would like to state for the record that it's not a this or that, and I think if you still think or believe that I am blaming everything on climate engineering, that's absolutely not the case. I lectured on climate change before I focused my energies on climate engineering because I believed it to be the superseding issue. Without addressing this issue, there can be no legitimate discussion of the state of the climate. So I would argue it's definitely not a this or that. And I think, Paul, you would agree, I believe, that any form of human activity that alters the energy balance of the climate or the natural processes of the planet would be a form of geoengineering, would it not?
Well, I think the definition of geoengineering talks about intentional large-scale modification of the climate. Of course, every human activity, you know, in the history of humanity has an impact on the climate. And it just so, Matt, so, it, you know, there's enough of us now, 7.6, 7.7 billion, and our technology is so advanced and large, you know, huge machines that can scrape the top of the Earth off and get to the tar sands underneath. Our technologies are so vast and there's so many of us where our impacts on the planet are greater and greater and greater. But the definition of geoengineering is intentional large-scale modification of the climate. And I don't, you know, this is unintentional. This is unintentional as a result of the fossil fuel industry.
But is it not, if I can be, just so I don't lose my point, I'm sorry because I didn't want to go off in a different direction here. Right? And don't mean to interrupt you, but I just want to lose my point. I have heard you say in a dissemination that in any form of human activity that alters the energy balance of the planet is a form of geoengineering. I think logically, rationally, that's correct. I mean, whether it's intentional or non-intentional is not necessarily the point. It's still, by definition, any form of human activity that alters the energy balance of the planet, I believe, must be considered a form of geoengineering because it's altering the natural systems. Now, this being said, if jet aircraft emissions can cover the entire sky, blotting out the sun, blocking solar energy from solar panels, which I know firsthand. I can state this for certain, again, as my background is in solar energy. My off-grid home was the cover article for the world's largest renewable energy magazine. We know that commercial solar power facilities are not generating anywhere near the amount of power they were expected to generate. The scientifically termed scenario of global dimming is undeniable. The part jet aircraft emissions are playing in this global dimming scenario is undeniable. The goal of solar radiation management proposals is to create a global dimming scenario with jet aircraft sprayed particulates. The exact elements named in solar radiation management patents are showing up in every single lab test of precipitation we take. I would just ask, Paul, what am I missing? Why should we accept the official denial of ongoing solar radiation management? And would everyone wants to consider the composition of what's coming out of these aircraft, why would we not consider that to be a form of geoengineering, whether intentional or otherwise?
Well, like, I guess, you know, you really, I mean, we could try to define geoengineering different ways, but when you know, if you go to the Oxford Dictionary or look at the Webster Dictionary on the definition, there is that intended component, and there's also the global large-scale component. I mean, otherwise, you could argue that creating snow on a ski hill the form of geoengineering. In terms of the aerosols, yes, we know about global dimming. The coal burning, coal contains sulfur, and there's vast amounts of burning of coal in power plants in China and India, and, you know, more so in third world countries, well, not in the West, per se, so much now. I mean, we based the Industrial Revolution on coal, but we're we've reduced it. We've gone to natural gas, which is a bit cleaner burning, but it does put aerosols up in the atmosphere, the particulates. And these particulates do cause a cooling. They shield some of the sunlight. Again, this is not intended. This is a byproduct of industrial civilization. These aerosols, right? So it has an effect on the climate, but it doesn't really fit under the strict definition of geoengineering. It's not intended to cool the planet. They're not pumping up. We don't have coal plants trying to cool the planet, right? We have coal plants to produce electrical energy.
I'm referring to specifically, though, Paul, what's being emitted from jet aircraft, not from coal power plants. We have no such plants on the Pacific Northwest where I exist. It's the Pacific Ocean for many thousands of miles. We know, in the case, for example, of aluminum, that aerosol is not migrating from China. We have California Air Resource Board studies to prove that. We have massive amounts of aluminum coming down in our precipitation here. It's a primary element named in climate engineering patents. It's of recent origin. We know that from soils pH changes, so it's a recent phenomenon. It matches, and again, back to the point I was trying to make, I'm speaking specifically about jet aircraft emissions. Whatever one wants to consider the composition of those emissions is not necessarily relevant for this conversation, but jet aircraft emissions that expand and linger in the sky, covering the entire sky, sometimes blocking 60-80% of my solar uptake, how can that not be considered a form of geoengineering? And if that's not solar radiation management, even though it's exactly what is described by solar radiation management proposals, jet aircraft spraying particulates into the sky, if that's not what's happening, what is it? And how can we not consider that to be an effect on the climate when, again, jet aircraft emissions, whatever you want to consider them, are literally blotting out the entire sky on many days? How can that not be considered a form of geoengineering?
You're arguing that jet aircraft exhaust is intentionally...
Oh, no, I'm not saying that. I'm saying whatever you want to consider the composition or the agenda or lack of agenda, the fact that it's happening, it is happening. I mean, we're talking about days that literally block 60 to 80% of my solar PV uptake sometimes. So... how can that not...
60 to 80%, you know, maybe you could provide some evidence. Those numbers seem very, very high, 60 to 80%. I could see a few percent, but, you know, 60 or 80%, I mean, it's almost dark, you're saying.
There are days, Paul, with aircraft emissions...
If 100% is blocked, we've got it completely dark during the middle of the day, right? 80%,
That's not true. Paul, that's not at all true. On a cloudy day, on a naturally cloudy day with a heavy storm, the solar PV uptake, you may not or must not be familiar in this arena. Solar PV uptake on a day where there is clearly enough visible light when a storm is passing over, I may have a 95% reduction in solar PV uptake. So PV is sensitive.
Yes, because it's directly over your particular panels. But, I mean, the sky is large. You're saying the entire sky is covered. If the entire sky is covered with, you know, 95% blockage, it's basically dark. I mean, But anyway,
Let me finish on that point, though. I'll let you go on. Okay. You need to perhaps research solar voltaic characteristics because it's light outside.
I do know about, I mean, there's the diffuse light, there's the direct light. You know, what you're talking about is the direct light is blocked, but there's still diffuse light that's coming from...
nothing to do with being dark.
Dane, let me jump in for a second.
Sure.
Could you describe what you were describing to me when you were driving down the road last week, and you could see this overcast cover and also the trails on the edges of this overcast cover? Could you describe that for listeners and Professor Beckwith?
Well, I think time-lapse film footage, which we have at geoengineeringwatch.org, Paul, would be helpful to you and to listeners to look and see firsthand on a time-lapse video that the aircraft dispersions, emissions, whatever you want to call them, whatever you want to conclude that the composition of those emissions are, that they, in fact, frequently cover the entire sky, the entire horizon. And my point is this, again, even if we want to accept the official narrative that that's condensation, which I would argue, and I will add more data to that in a moment, the science does not support that that is condensation for many reasons, including the fact that all commercial carriers and all military tankers have a high-bypass turbofan jet engine. Only 15% of the air that passes through that engine is combusted. So They're nearly incapable of producing any condensation trail except under rare and extreme circumstances. But even if we pretend, or we assume, or we accept the official narrative that that's just condensation, how can that not be considered geoengineering when it can literally cover the entire horizon? And on some days, yes, block 60 to 80% of my solar PV uptake. And we have commercial plants with the same type of statistics. They're producing just over half what they were designed to produce. There's clearly something radical going on. We can see that these emissions from time-lapse photography are the sole source of the canopy that's covering horizon to horizon on many days. Paul, I'm just asking a question. How can we not consider that to be geoengineering, whether intentional or otherwise?
Well, I guess I'm questioning the... let me ask you a question. Does the temperature plummet when this happens in your region? It's still warm days.
Certainly, when it blocks the direct sunlight in the heat of the day, there is typically a temperature reduction. However, that blanket, that canopy, as NOAA, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, has also acknowledged, is trapping heat. And thus, nighttime temperatures are not just because of the aircraft emissions. Obviously, we have methane, nitrous oxide, CO2, all building up in the atmosphere, all causing nighttime temperatures to escalate twice as fast as daytime highs.
So what's the source of the heat? What's the source of the heat in your region where 60 to 80% of the light is blocked? Because it should be a lot colder than it is if it's 60 to 80%. And then, it's going to be very cold during the day, and there won't be that much heat to be blocked. It depends on altitude of clouds or aerosols as to whether heat is blocked or not. It's generally the cirrus clouds that keep heat trapped in, and it's the low altitude clouds that make it cooler at the ground. They block incoming sunlight. So, and that depends on the nature of the particles, like the aerosols, the nature of the size, for example. The reason why the sky is blue is because of the size of the nitrogen molecules in the air. They scatter light. They scatter blue light a lot more. They scatter the long wavelengths and they reflect those away. What you're left is with blue. So your eye gets the blue. There's a lot more blue light scattered to your eye when you look up. The sky appears blue. So it depends on the particle size. If you've got rain clouds, for example, very black clouds, those are very large droplets. Almost no light is coming back to your eye from those. So, we can talk about atmospheric physics. It doesn't make sense to me. It's obvious if people are trying to geoengineer to cool the planet because of climate change, it's certainly not working. I mean, temperatures are still skyrocketing. Our climate disasters are getting a lot worse. If we wanted, there are, I can tell you of some definite things that are going on in attempts to look at study, solar radiation management or geoengineering. I mean, one idea that was just in the press a few days ago was little silica particles to put on the ice. It's basically sand, very highly reflective, but it's very reflective white sand. So about the size of a human hair. So if you put that on the sea ice, and they're testing this in Alaska on the lake, they're trying to see whether it can preserve ice on the lake, whether it'll last, stick around for a while. David Keith is looking at spraying water or sulfur from a balloon in the atmosphere to do that. People are looking at ways to put solar pumps on the sea ice to pump water from below the ice onto the surface of the ice where it can freeze if the air is still above below zero, because ice is a very good insulator. So people are starting to do some of these, and you can sort of track the funding. I mean, what you're talking about...
I think
about,
we're diverging, though, Paul. Forgive me. I don't want to diverge from the subject at hand of all the various proposals, which I would argue are simply red herrings to take people's eye off the fact or to confuse them as to the fact that climate engineering is ongoing. And what I'm trying to ask you, if you will let me, on the blue skies part, we don't see many here in Northern California. Perhaps you see some in Canada, although we hear from many people in Canada that don't see them now as well either. And climate engineering, specifically stated by science institutions around the globe, will completely alter our once blue skies. That's in fact what we see. But my question to you again is, very simply, if you could ask, If we know, we have film footage to prove over and over and over that aircraft emissions, whatever we want to consider the composition of those emissions, can and are blotting out the entire sky frequently, constantly, consistently, how can we not consider that a form of geoengineering? How can that not be considered in the equation? And if that's not geoengineering, if you're saying that that's not actually geoengineering, how do you know that? And if that's not geoengineering, what exactly would stratospheric aerosol geoengineering look like when it's proposed to be sprayed particulates from jets? If it doesn't look like that, what would it look like?
Okay, well, spraying sulfur dust.
Paul, let me jump in for a second. Can you answer? Hold on. I know he asked a lot of questions, but I want. Could you answer this question in particular? How do you know for sure that geoengineering isn't occurring in the way that Dane described? Like, what data do you have that convinces you?
Well, you know, science. So first of all, there's a number. I would argue, there's no way you're blocking 80% of the sunlight.
I didn't say sunlight. Paul, I said 80% of solar power uptake.
I just don't believe those numbers. Air traffic control is way, way up. You can get a flight. You can go on websites and get a flight to Europe for a few hundred bucks.
That's actually not true. It's actually not true. It's decreased.
Okay, aircraft flying is way, way up. It's exploding in numbers. Airports are still being built around the world. There's way more air traffic than there used to be. That's one thing. The second thing is the stratosphere has cooled, okay? Part of climate change is that the greenhouse gases trap the heat in the lower atmosphere, the troposphere. Less light gets back up into the upper atmosphere, the stratosphere. So the stratosphere cools. That's the second key point. The third key point is there's always water vapor in combustion from jet engines, and that water vapor in a cooler environment is going to condense, and those condensation trails stick around for a long period of time depending on the conditions. But the conditions are favorable for them to stick around for a long period of time. So those are things that I know, like what Dane is talking about would be trillions and trillions of dollars of money that isn't being accounted for anywhere. So if you want to invoke deep state and secret military programs and stuff, then I'm not privy to those things. So I don't know about those things. I mean, Dane seems to think that he does know about them. So we have our differences. I can only go by what I understand from the science.
From what I understand, there has been reports and studies that commercial air traffic has actually reduced and bottomed out in 2012, and it's climbing back up very slowly. But it was peaking at around 2007, and around 2012, the spraying that I see it as well was very significant, and onward through 2010 and
well,
onward
it lowered
through.
It did lower the rise when oil was $150 a barrel. I do know that for sure, right? It was more expensive to fly. So it depends a lot on that type of thing. But also, you know, I mean, they you don't get food anymore on planes. They really chopped all expenses that aren't totally necessary.
So I don't think it's a result of this. And I'm curious if you had actually. Have you had time to look at the photographic and video evidence that is on Dane's website? That it does clearly show that it's not commercial jet air traffic.
I would argue that to a point, Jeff, in that we do have film footage of commercial carriers with nozzles mounted on the pylons, retrofit nozzles.
That's true. So I take that back.
So we do have that. If I could address a few of Paul's questions really before we get too far on this. Paul, again, what I referred to in 60% to 80% loss of photovoltaic power uptake, not 80% loss of visible light. Two very different things. So please clarify that. In regards to, again, what you assume is condensation, and I would ask you how you know that's condensation, and what study do you refer that proves conclusively what we, each of us, are seeing in the skies in each particular case is condensation. In regard to the jet engines, Paul, are you familiar with the difference between a high bypass turbofan, a low bypass turbofan, or a straight turbofan jet engine. Are you familiar with the design characteristic differences in those engines?
Well, I listened to the aerospace engineer that you were talking about. It has to do, those type of, what is really important is the temperature of the air coming out of the back of the engine.
No, it matters.
And
it matters
completely.
Paul, I'm just asking if you're familiar.
Yeah, I
don't want to divert.
You're changing
the subject, though. I don't want to do that. I want to finish this question, if you can let me finish. I'll clarify for you. In, for example, a turbofan jet engine, 100% of the air that moves through that engine is exposed to the engine combustion. In the case of a high bypass, it's only 15%, very different design characteristics. We have atmospheric relative humidity declining, not escalating. It should be escalating on a warming planet. You and I would agree, but it's not. We have unimaginably low humidities at altitude, and engines which only 15% of the air, that's a jet-powered fan, only 15% of the air that passes through a high bypass is combusted. That engine, by design, is nearly incapable of producing any condensation trail. And in regard to the missing trillions, you're correct. I challenge any of your listeners, Jeff, to look it up. The Pentagon is missing trillions of dollars. Estimates go from $8 trillion to $30 trillion. Unaccounted for. Trillions of dollars, Paul, as you said. And this is not conspiracy theory. It's not conjecture or hypothesis. It's confirmed fact. So go ahead.
Okay. So is this just in the U.S. you're talking about then? Are you saying that every
Pentagon.
Government of the country has... Okay, but what about people in Australia that say this is going on? Is the Australian government spending their military doing the same thing? Is the military in China doing the same thing? The world's a big place, right?
Okay.
Yeah, no, just seriously. I mean,
I'm trying
to
answer.
It's a good question.
Global thing.
I'm trying to answer. So we have a nearly 800-page Senate document that expressly calls for the cooperation of otherwise opposing governments and powers in regard to climate engineering because of the cross-border ramifications. So although I don't have access to the actual budgets in China or Australia, I certainly have access to what is confirmed in the U.S., and as you stated, there would be trillions missing, and in fact there are, and that's confirmed fact. So the bottom line is, we can argue semantics, we can argue fine points, but we're back to the statement that, you know, I would be grateful if you would answer. When we have aircraft emissions that expand and linger, whatever those emissions are, whatever the composition is, that block the entire skyline, how can that not be considered a form of geoengineering, whether intentional or otherwise? And if that's not geoengineering, if that's not solar radiation management as described in patents and science study, describing jet aircraft spraying light, scattering particles, as David Keith called for and others, Ken Caldera, if that's not geoengineering, what would geoengineering look like? Is it going to block even more sun than we already see? What would it look like if this isn't geoengineering we're already seeing?
If you so what would it look like if you put sulfur dioxide up into the stratosphere for the objective of geoengineering to cool the climate, to bring some stability? Then it would block, it would look like, you wouldn't even notice it on the ground. It would block about 1% of the light, 2% at the most. That's it. You wouldn't even notice it on the ground. That's what it would
2%
look like.
On top of the massive amounts of global dimming we already have, depending on the study, 20 to 30%. Another 1 or 2% up in the stratosphere is going to somehow alter the equation in the right way.
How much do you think the global dimming is causing cooling globally at the moment on the planet?
Well, science study says it's doing both, Paul. It's
how much is it cooling? Like, we've warmed, I just checked the numbers on the warming. Since 1880, we've warmed about 0.9 degrees. You add another 0.2 or 0.3 if you make it relative to 1750, that's about 1.2 degrees Celsius. If we completely eliminated aerosols from coal plants around the world, we shut down industry, and the aerosols would take about a week to drop out of the sky from rain, et cetera. They're all in the lower atmosphere. We would warm, it's an open question how much it would be. Some people say up to 3 degrees warming in that week. Most scientists say the low number is about 0.3 degrees, 0.4 degrees. It's probably somewhere in the middle range. It's maybe 0.8 degrees Celsius or something like that, or a degree.
This sounds like Guy McPherson's narrative, and I would, in regard to the state of the planet, I would argue it's much warmer than your statistics would indicate. And we are taking temperature readings on the ground ourselves, and we see a consistent radical underreporting of the official high temperature. So I would argue, Paul, that we are likely statistically far hotter than that. But Paul, it's not just a cooling from global dimming. And why
isn't how are you measuring really warm temperatures on the ground if you're getting 60 to 80% of the light which would give electricity and solar panels? It would certainly be a lot cooler.
Paul, visible light has nothing to do with the temperature that's obviously taken with the thermometer. So regardless of the amount of solar photovoltaic uptake, which has nothing to do with visible light, I keep trying to drive that point home. I'm talking about solar photovoltaic uptake. So a diffuse light radically reduces that. So it's not an 80% reduction in light. And we have, can I finish the thought, though? After 9/11, we know that daytime temperatures went up, yes, for the reasons you described, but nighttime temperatures went down because that same blanket of aerosols that's creating global dimming, that's deflecting some of the sun's incoming thermal radiation during the day, is also trapping that radiation. It's trapping it. So we have a double-edged sword, do we not? And why is that not acknowledged from people like yourself or Guy McPherson that think we can tech our way out of the situation, or at least you do? I would argue that technology and the misuse of that has brought us to this point, and thinking that technology is going to save us, at least this type of technology, and the notion, as you stated on the windmills you brought up earlier, the proposal to put 10 million wind-powered water pumps on the Arctic to pump cool water from the seafloor, that would allow warmer water to hit the methane hydrates on the seafloor and cause them to release. Every type of tech fix, Paul, has led to total cataclysm, as climate engineering has. And again, we're right back to the point, simple question. If aircraft emissions are already covering the entire sky, and that's not arguable, we have
Canada. I don't see that where I am. In fact, when I take videos and I walk along the canal outside, it's like a normal clouds in the sky, and people say, "Hey, look, look at the chemtrails behind in the video. You know, look at those clouds in the sky." So digital cameras, the response, you know, you can take pictures and have something look like anything, right? Like I was in Florida recently, I took pictures of a bunch of different clouds and things. I mean, I'm a weather guy, as well as climate. I look up. I mean, I lived in California for a few years. I don't know why. I mean, I'll have to come and visit you and see what you're seeing, and you can try to explain to me what's going on. I mean, I just don't. You know, the climate disruption is what we're talking about. Okay, you're focusing on that one point. Let's focus on the climate. Let's focus on why is the Arctic so warm right now? Why is the Arctic warming at rate?
Can I answer that? Obviously, we have obviously anthropogenic activity, which we cannot begin to quantify in this program, is a major factor. But as I just stated,
you mean greenhouse gases? What do you mean anthropogenic activity?
Okay, of course. Okay. But that includes climate engineering, Paul. And I would argue this: how can we? You say you want to talk about the climate. I would argue this, and I think this is rationally difficult to argue against. How can we have any legitimate discussion about the climate or the state of the climate without first and foremost addressing climate engineering? And in regard to what you say you're not seeing in Canada, we have photographs and film footage from all over the world, including Canada, of skies that look like something from another planet. And I would encourage listeners to go to the geoengineeringwatch.org photo gallery to see those photos from all over the world. The sun is completely blotted out from aircraft trails that are not, and I repeat, not on commercial routes. We can track that with Flight Tracker 24. These jets are not on commercial routes. Typically, often, when we see a grid pattern going down, we have absolutely non-commercial routes. I was in a high-level EPA meeting at the Capitol in California, arranged by a congressional rep, 5 top EPA people there. I was shown at that meeting GPS tracking of aircraft along the U.S. West Coast doing loops up and down the coast. You cannot get that information except through a high-ranking government official. Why are they doing loops up and down the coast? And nobody at that meeting could answer that. And those individuals at that meeting, Paul, in regard to the elements that are coming down through the air column, told me to my face, they are told to test for combustion particulates only. The rest of the sample goes out the window. There is there are so many dots that connect here, Paul, and I'd hope you would have looked at some of the data at geoengineeringwatch.org, and I understand this issue is scary. I understand that. I mean, I didn't want to face this either. I didn't want to spend the last 15 years of my life on it, but I'm simply asking you to consider that unless you're truly willing to look at data that would support everything we're stating, which we have, including congressional documents, Senate documents, film footage, unless you're willing to look at that, is it fair to maintain a certain opinion that it's not happening without looking at the data?
Well, how can you have record temperatures on the ground if it's done to the extent that you're talking about? You'd have cool temperatures on the ground. You wouldn't have.
Not if the heat's being trapped, Paul. No, not if the heat's being trapped. That's
well, the heat has to get in the first case, and the source is only the sun. Okay, that's it. The source is the sun. So if you're not letting the heat get in, it's going to be colder, and there'll be less heat trapped because it's colder to begin with. So there's an inconsistency.
Nobody said the heat wasn't getting in. I don't understand. You're coming to conclusions that I haven't given.
If you're blocking 60 to 80% of the sun, there's no heat coming in. It's being blocked.
60% of solar PV uptake. That has nothing to do with visible light or anything else.
The sun's a black body, okay? It puts out energy. It's 7,000 Kelvin. It's a black body. It puts out a Planck curve of radiation, which peaks in the visible light, okay? PV panels are mostly sensitive by the photoelectric effect in the visible spectrum. So if you're blocking the visible light, then you're blocking the panels, and it's going to be darker and colder on the ground. And there's an inconsistency here, because if you're blocking that quantity of light, it's just going to be colder on the ground. I don't understand. I have to look at the... Maybe there's something else happening which I don't understand. But
I acknowledge that daytime temperatures, as happened after 9/11, Paul, you know, for the listeners that didn't quite catch that, after 9/11, when all the aircraft were grounded over the U.S., we saw exactly what we would expect to see. Daytime temperatures went up. Nighttime temperatures, Paul, went down. Did they not?
Yeah, because we have aerosols. Can be droplets. It's anything non-water.
Trapping
it can be
heat.
Liquid droplets or particles of different size, and it blocks sunlight, and it also traps heat. Yeah, so
that's my
when
point.
It's not there, it's warmer in the
point.
Day, and it's more heat radiates out to space, the long-wave radiation, and it's colder at night. So the daily temperature range increased for those days after 9/11, after the planes weren't.
Is that not by itself an acknowledgement that the aircraft are affecting the global thermostat?
There's no question that our aircraft flying around the world are affecting climate. There's no question that traffic, marine traffic, spewing bunker C, you know, dirty, polluting fuel around the planet is affecting climate. All of these things are affecting climate, but they're not, by the definition of the word geoengineering, they're not intentionally trying to mess with the climate. They're going about their daily business and inadvertently affecting the climate. This is why we have to change doing what we do. I'm totally on that. It's just like it's just maybe hopefully it's not just a semantics thing with the definition of the word, right? Because I'm using the definition from Webster's or the Oxford, you know, the intentional large scale modification of the climate. So our industrialized society is forgiving us. Letting us advance as a society and do things and stuff. It's not to intentionally destroy the planet, right? It's an inadvertent effect, and this is what we've got to come to grips with. This is why it's so difficult to deal with climate change, because it's the basis for our entire civilization.
Paul, how are you so certain that it is an unintentional effect in terms of what Dane is speaking of, and that is a deliberate aerosol operation going on that is affecting the heat balance and that is visible to many people across the world? What data are you looking at that keeps you convinced that it is not occurring?
I try to just keep things as simple as possible, okay? I mean, I try to look at I do thinking for myself. I go into the peer-reviewed literature and see what's going on, but I do thinking for myself. Like for example, the Arctic warming like crazy, and literally warming like crazy, means obviously that it throws off the heat balance on the planet. So the way jet streams form is because of the temperature difference. The Arctic's cold, the equator's warm. Air moves from cold areas to hot areas to cold areas, it does it. How is heat moved on the planet? It moves in the atmosphere. It moves in the ocean. About a third in the ocean sets up the ocean currents, the Gulf Stream, the Kuroshio Current. In the air, it forms the jet streams. If that temperature difference decreases, the jet streams get wavier. You get stuck jet streams and extreme weather events. So I look from basic principles, basic physical principles about how the Earth is rotating, so things deflect to the right in the northern hemisphere. I look at the basic principles and create a picture.
Forgive me, Paul. I don't understand how that in any way answers Jeff's question. I don't understand.
Well, what it means is that this weather disruption that we're seeing around the planet is due to the changing planetary system, the way heat balance has changed. You can invoke trillion-dollar secret programs around the globe, but that doesn't. I don't want to do that. I don't need to do that to explain why we're seeing the disruption that we're seeing right now.
Does that negate the reality, Paul? When we have literally atmospheric conditions, let me just get one point and you can answer it. Similar atmospheric conditions, we have grid patterns one day with east-west flights that do not exist commercially over our area, forming grid patterns literally. Next day, we may have nothing. We have film footage of jet aircraft leaving a trail from horizon to horizon next to an aircraft, similar altitude, leaving nothing. We have film footage of an aircraft leaving a trail from horizon to horizon that stopped as it was cut with a knife. We have photographs of novels on the aircraft.
What is it doing? What's the purpose of it? Like, what is it doing? It doesn't affect the warming of the Arctic. It doesn't affect the extreme weather events. It would cause cooling where you are. So if the sky is blocking, if you're blocking 60 to 80% of light, I'm sorry, it's not going to be hot on the ground. It's going to be cold. Okay, so is that what is being done for?
Dane,
why would the government spend trillions of dollars to make it cold over California? I don't understand.
Dane, listeners know from past shows and a lot of the research provided by Dane and others that geoengineering has been used, is currently being used, to create droughts and ruin farmers' livelihoods and as political punishment. And also,
We wouldn't make those conjectures, though, Jeff. What we would state is this, that certainly that is a result. We don't make those kind of conjectures on geoengineeringwatch.org. We're simply saying that's a consequence.
Right, others.
The agendas we can discuss or we can debate, but stating that's a consequence.
So, and I'm saying it's the jet streams are wavy and distorted and getting stuck, and this is why we get torrential rains, like 5 feet of rain in Hawaii just a few days ago. This is why we had, we're getting droughts in other places because the jet streams get stuck. And in the ridge of the jet stream, it's hot and warm. And in the trough, it's stormy and cold. And these things get stuck. And it explains why there's global weather disruption. And it's because the Arctic is so warm. Like,
I don't think we're here to discuss that, though, Paul. We're here to discuss the different opinions.
What people care about.
When you say the jet stream is stuck, Dane, can you talk about how even the jet stream is being manipulated? Can you talk about that element?
Paul, if ionosphere heater, which we know exists, and I encourage listeners to look this up, don't believe me, we have ground-based radio frequency microwave transmitters that can verifiably heat the ionosphere because it causes an electrical chain reaction to extraordinary temperatures. This causes a bulge in the atmosphere. Stated purpose is to slow an incoming ICBM, but that bulge in the atmosphere creates pressure zones in the lower atmosphere, i.e., that can affect upper-level wind patterns. And this is not being acknowledged either. But Paul, back to whatever the natural processes of the climate were, I'm asking again, how can you state with any certainty that what we are seeing in our skies is not solar radiation management when, again, high bypass turbofan jet engine, not conducive to contrail formation, except under the most extreme and rare circumstances, grid patterns with aircraft trails running completely perpendicular to commercial routes, film footage of aircraft turning on and off, and photographs of aircraft with retrofit nozzles mounted on the pylons aimed into the exhaust jet stream nozzles, and photographs from the aircraft interiors with pressurized tanks, Paul, that can only be used for some sort of spray dispersion. We have all of that evidence. How can you discount all that evidence and say that
you're not
for
changing
certain nothing's going on?
You're not, if you're talking about this being over California, Okay,
no, did I say that, Paul? Did I say that? Did
well,
I ever say that?
I don't have it where I am.
I don't, well, that's interesting because we have a lot of photos from Canada and all over the world, but I never ever.
Yeah, well, you know, I was walking along the canal. I took a video, and people said, "Hey, this guy in the back. There's all these trails and stuff." It's like, listen, let me put it this way: if a ball is rolling down a hill, I would just argue it's gravity. Okay, it seems to me that you would cite about 10 different papers on it. You talk about maybe a motor inside the ball, or you talk about something happening. There's a planet up there that's making gravity form.
I'm just asking you to cite some facts.
Gravity,
please don't make preposterous analogies, Paul. I'm asking you to cite some facts, as I have photographs, film footage, documents. I'm asking you to cite some facts other than.
I'm talking about global climate disruption, and I've explained why. You know, the linchpin of the system is the Arctic. The Arctic is warming like crazy. I mean, the high Arctic will be 20 degrees Celsius, 40 degrees Fahrenheit, warmer than normal over vast region. And there's reasons for that. It's because the heat balance has changed. Okay, the Arctic is a lot darker. The Arctic overall used to reflect 52% of the light. That number has gone down to 48%.
Can we keep it on theme? I'm just asking to keep it on theme. We're here to discuss climate engineering and why you think it's not happening, and we're not arguing that fact.
Okay, well, look at the physics of the jet streams. Why do the jet streams exist? Because of the heat movement, and it gets focused and concentrated. So the jet. So obviously, no. I'm just talking about. I don't know about what you're seeing in the sky in California. I'm not there myself, but I know that globally. You know, it's just too far-fetched for me that all of these different groups would be conspiring and this stuff wouldn't have been uncovered years and years ago and stopped being done. Or
is that really a solid argument, though, Paul? Because that's sort of the standard narrative, that you know, it just seems impossible, so therefore it can't be. It's not working,
well, you know,
therefore it can't be.
It's
the same argument that Doug McMartin, Paul, put out, that because it wasn't his particular definition of geoengineering, it couldn't be so, and I hear you saying the same thing. It's not working, therefore it can't be. There's no way they can hide it, so therefore it can't be.
No, Dane, it's, listen, I mean, there is a scientific community. There's thousands of scientists, you know, tens of thousands, hundreds, you know.
With a federal gag order on there, by the way. Do you know that, Paul? Do you know that, though? I can answer that question before you move on. You know there's a federal gag order on all National Weather Service and no employees, do you not? On top of the fact they have no First Amendment protection. Pardon me?
To talk about what? A federal gag order on what? Like
you
what
can review
topic?
The document yourself to discuss any agency operations whatsoever. There's a gag order. So, again,
okay.
the notion that it just can't be... Well, Paul, I'm just asking for some facts. I'm asking for a response to
here's what I recommend that you do, Dane. Subscribe to... I can send you the email. Subscribe to some geoengineering groups with scientists, okay? It's scientists. There's like hundreds of scientists emailing back and forth on all different topics on geoengineering, and start putting some of your evidence on there, and you know, seeing how they'll respond or don't, because they'll just discount it. So just follow what they say and what they talk about. They talk about the SPICE experiment, for example, that Keith is going to do. They talk about.
Believe whatever academia and whatever official agencies tell us. That makes sense.
I'm just saying if I'm gonna listen to, you know, I try to follow science as much as I can, and I have not spent 15 years looking at what you've been looking at. I look at the overall climate. I look at the Arctic. I look at the jet streams. I look at the weather events. And I can explain things that are happening by not invoking any sort of secret military program or I can.
Well, why do you think the aircraft, we have multiple pictures of aircraft, passenger aircraft even, that are filled completely with pressurized tanks. Why do you think those tanks are there, Paul? Why do you think they have nozzles on the aircraft?
Well,
I mean,
because you don't know. Those tanks, maybe it's a low-level spraying operation, farmer spraying his field.
With a passenger aircraft. They're crop dusting with passenger aircraft, Airbus 300s and other large aircraft, military.
Where are they, in the hold or something? They're
well,
the,
obviously
you
haven't looked.
So
you have a very strong opinion, asked you to do, to look at this data. I think, Paul, would certainly be helpful to form an opinion based on...
Yeah, I've looked at the data, and I think it's very easy to doctor photographs. It's very easy to spread fake news or false information about things with photographs or with videos. It's extremely difficult, and it's an extremely difficult problem. It's a new, it's a problem of our internet era. How do you know what to believe?
I challenge anybody to find a Photoshop a photograph on any of our articles, and I challenge people to look at that data. And Paul, forgive me, but that seems a very weak and very inappropriate narrative that lacks facts to simply parrot the official sort of statements of knee-jerk denial without looking at the data. I think that's not really scientific to do, Paul.
I've tried to read as many papers as I can on weather modification experiments and things like that. I know there's like it doesn't make any sense to me to block out 60 to 80% of the sun over California.
I didn't say it was specifically over California, Paul.
Let me interrupt for a second. Why do you keep saying that? Because that's Dane has corrected you on that three times now, but you keep going back to the same comment. I'm a little surprised at your behavior, to tell you the truth, since you've been invited back on. I didn't expect you to go this direction.
I do appreciate Paul coming back, though. Let me ask you this question, and I'll leave it to you. Do you think governments around the globe would ask our permission before engaging in programs when we have our military stating on the record they consider, rightfully so, the collapsing climate to be the greatest national security threat of all? Do you think they would ask public permission before they deployed these programs, which, again, we have Senate documents to prove they've already been deployed for 70 years, but do you think they would ask for permission before they did this?
No, I don't think they would ask permission. And also, we don't account for the military, all the military missions and equipment. Those numbers aren't even counted in greenhouse gas emissions for the U.S. They're excluded.
I realize that, but
same
again...
same with Canada, yeah. I mean,
climate engineering, again, based on the fact that everything we see is exactly what's stated as will be an expected result of climate engineering, the loss of blue skies, ozone layer destruction, which I know CFCs are an issue too, but climate engineering also a major issue that's scientifically verified. We have the same contaminants in the rain that we are told we would have that are showing up on climate engineering patents. We have a total disruption of the hydrological cycle. Everything that we would expect, and not the greenhouse gases aren't a part of that, but every dot connects, including photographic imagery, Senate documents, government documents. Why would we believe this isn't happening? I mean, I just don't, other than the fact that you say...
I don't think every dot connects. I mean, the chemical studies of what's in the soils, our measurement technology is way better. We can detect hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of chemicals, you know, what's in, that are in a human body or that are in a soil or any environment, and we're connected. You probably find radioisotopes from Chernobyl.
I don't know what this we're really diverging from the subject at hand again.
Point is those tests are invalid, okay? You can't use chemical tests to say that there's geoengineering going on, right?
You can't measure precipitation.
No, you don't, because in industrial pollution...
I already answered that too, Paul. California Air Resources Board has studied the aerosols migrating across the Pacific from China. Aluminum was not amongst those aerosols. It's in the precipitation. It's in the air column now. Where's it coming from?
Have you talked to some? Do you get anybody at the California Air Resources Board to agree with you on what you're saying?
I just cited their own study, Paul.
No, but you've talked to them. You've talked to them and claimed that it's planes that are spraying stuff over your region. And do you get any agreement from any authorities, or are they under this gag order?
Did I not answer that, Paul? This is obviously a very bad career decision, or worse. Have I had a congressional aide approach me at the Capitol and say, we all know what's going on, we don't know what to do? Yes. Have I had a NOAA employee say the same thing to my face? Yes. Paul, what I'm saying is that this elephant in the room is incredibly massive. When we have aircraft that can cover the entire horizon doing grid patterns, non-commercial paths, and we have nothing the next day, or we have aircraft leaving a trail across the horizon that shuts off or starts again within a very short distance, on, off, like a Morse code. You can't tell me that's atmospheric conditions that are layered vertically. I'm asking people to look at the data, and I wish you would have done that. Aircraft interiors, pressurized tanks.
I'm asking you to focus on the things that are really important, like the warming Arctic and the jet
based
stream.
On your opinion. I lectured on climate change before I did this. You're not talking about someone who denies the state of the climate. I'm simply saying, how can we have a legitimate discussion about the climate without including climate engineering? And it's at some point this is going to break. At some point this can't be hidden any longer, and I would argue that point is close. We're communicating with former Senate Armed Services Committee members, former Air Force personnel, university people. This will break, Paul, and I hope that you consider your lack of willingness to investigate.
Well, we're running out of time here. We have to prepare for the next show coming up. But I want to say thank you, both of you, for being on this geoengineering debate and for the second round. Professor Paul Beckwith, the physicist and engineer at University of Ottawa Laboratory of Paleoclimatology, and also with a focus on abrupt climate system change. Paul, I thought we were going to gain a little more ground. I don't always agree with Occam's razor as a default. Sometimes that can be used as obstacle, yes, at times. But I appreciate you having the courage to be back on live on the air to speak with Dane about this. And Dane Wigington, lead researcher of geoengineeringwatch.org, thank you again for bringing this research to the airwaves.
Yes. Thank you, Paul. Thank you, Jim. Dane.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff.
Okay, well, that's going to do it for this In Other News special. Thanks so much for tuning in, and visit inothernewsradio.com for more information in the archive of this.